Please be seated. Good morning, everyone. The first case on calendar today is Kaufman v. HLK, LLC, case number 59797. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning. Before we get underway, Justice Seda has an announcement and an introduction to make.
With the Chief's permission and my colleague's support, I am honored and pleased to introduce a guest that we have here in the courtroom with us today. Her name is Cassidy Henson. She is a high school senior from North Valleys High School. She is desirous of becoming a part of our government process, and she is with us today shadowing for the judicial branch. Cassidy, would you please stand to be recognized? Thank you for being here, and I know that our attorneys will give you an interesting argument, or at least an interesting advocacy of their side of the argument this morning. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, and welcome, Cassidy. You may proceed.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lee Moloff, and I represent the appellant in today's argument. The issue before the court today that has to be decided is whether or not the district court erred when it divested the appellant, Charles Kaufman, of his interest in an LLC, HLK LLC. We believe that the court did err, and that's what my argument will be today. Now, the LLC at issue is HLK. It's an LLC that was formed in July of 1997 by three members: the appellant, Charles Kaufman, one of the respondents, Russell Hawley, and a gentleman by the name of Frank Lemby, a business associate of Mr. Hawley. Thus, the name HLK, which I think is important to understand, H for Hawley, L for Lemby, and K for Mr. Kaufman. The purpose of the formation of the LLC in 1997 was to purchase a building to be used by a related entity, Restaurant Facilities Limited, RFL, an entity owned by respondent Mr. Hawley, and an entity that was run by Mr. Kaufman from 1991 until 2002. RFL manufactured modular bathrooms, the kinds of bathrooms that you find in city parks and highway rest stops. And they needed a facility. They thought it made business sense to have a facility owned by related parties for the manufacturing. The operating agreement and the articles of organization were all executed and filed appropriately in July of 1997. And in that operating agreement, it set forth the relative percentage interests of the three members of the LLC: 20% to Mr. Kaufman, the appellant; 20% to Mr. Lemby; and 60% to Mr. Hawley. And the purpose was, again, to purchase a building, and the monetary contributions that were to go in were to make the down payment for the purchase of that building. And there is no dispute that the entire amount of funds necessary to purchase or to make the down payment for the purchase of the building were deposited into escrow, including the amounts that were required for Mr. Kaufman, Mr. Lemby, and Mr. Hawley. Mr. Lemby and Mr. Hawley were required to contribute approximately $54,000, and Mr. Hawley was required to deposit as his contribution approximately $130,000, give or take a few thousand dollars.
The district court seemed to have some issues as to Mr. Kaufman's source of funds. Does that affect the agreement at all? Or?
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's the issue. That is the issue. Whether or not the district court's reliance on the fact that Mr. Kaufman, he didn't go into his pocket and take out the $54,000. That's not where it came from. The $54,000 came from a couple of other sources. First source was from RFL Restaurant Facilities Limited. Mr. Kaufman was the president of that entity, and over the course of years had taken advances against his salary, had taken loans from the company. And he took $24,000 of the $54,000 from RFL. But Justice Douglas, that's not really a rational reason why the court should have ruled against him. Because if, in fact, that money came from RFL, which it did, then RFL has a claim against Mr. Kaufman.
Did Mr. Kaufman pay taxes on that money that he took out of RFL?
I don't know if he paid
taxes. Was that any evidence of that developed in district court?
I don't think that was at all an issue in this case. The related case, which I'll discuss in a moment, there may have been some issues about taxes, but I don't think that's not relevant to why we believe the district court erred.
But let me understand, the money that was paid for your client's interest was not his money, but rather money that the district court found he breached his fiduciary duty in treating as his own and using to pay that, correct?
That's true.
So it's not unlike, and I'm not accusing him of theft, but if somebody steals money and bought an interest in an LLC with that, you're saying that person's, where he got the money should be immaterial. Analytically, that he still establishes himself as a member, even if he didn't legitimately come by the funds he used to buy that interest.
The district court, one of the claims against Mr. Kaufman in the related case was for conversion. The district court denied that claim, and the only claim that was found against Mr. Kaufman in the related case was for breach of fiduciary duty because he didn't get formal approval to borrow those monies. And in that related case, the various claims back and forth between Mr. Kaufman and RFL were resolved. Mr. Kaufman had claims against him to RFL, and RFL had claims for past salary to Mr. Kaufman, and they were offset, and those judgments were all paid by Mr. Kaufman. So if, in fact, the money did come where it did come from RFL, that, in fact, has already been, in essence, either paid back by the payment of the judgment against Mr. Kaufman by RFL in the related case, or else RFL has a claim or that was res judicata after the 2005 trial.
So, counsel, what is it that you claim in this case establishes the basis or foundation of your client's ownership interest?
$54,000 was deposited into the escrow on Mr. Kaufman's behalf. And under the LLC statutes that we've adopted that are basically the uniform LLC statutes that have been adopted, I believe, in most jurisdictions in this country.
So we look with blinders as to where or how that money came to be a part of his ownership interest. That's all you want us to look at is that $54,000 that forms the basis of his ownership interest.
You know, under the LLC statute, under 86391, even if we make the assumption, and we don't, the appellant does not make this assumption, but if we do make the assumption that he didn't put any of his money in, money that he is liable for, into the LLC, even if we assume that, under 86391 and the case law I'll discuss in a moment, he still keeps his interest in the LLC. He keeps his interest in the LLC, subject to a claim by the LLC for that money. 86391, which is titled Liability of Members to Company, reads at subsection 1, a member is liable to a limited liability company, A, for a difference between the member's contribution to capital as actually made and as stated in the Articles of Organization or Operating Agreement as having been made, and for any unpaid contribution to capital which the member agreed in the Articles of Organization or Operating Agreement to make in the future. So what that says is, even if Mr. Kaufman didn't put in the $54,000, because the Articles of Organization or the Articles of Organization and the Operating Agreement provided that he had a 20% interest, that was established at the time that that LLC was formed. There's a case.
Essentially, operating agreements are rooted in contract law ultimately, particularly in this context. So your position is, just to be clear, that the ordinary contract rule, if you don't pay for the car, you don't get the car, doesn't apply in this setting.
Not
That's what you're in essence saying, is I could go down to the car lot and say, I'm going to buy this interest in the LLC for $20, and I never pay for it, but nonetheless, if they say, yeah, we'll sell it to you for that, then I'm ensconced with the rights of a member.
Under Nevada LLC law, and by the way, this is not, even though LLC law is relatively new in the history of our jurisprudence, it's based in partnership law, or the merger of partnership law and corporation law, as we all understand. And it's been a standard principle of partnership law for millennia, I guess, that just because you haven't made your contribution, if there's an agreement that you are a partner, you are a partner. Mm-hmm. And the partnership, or in this case the LLC, has a claim back against you for that amount. Either they have a claim that they can pursue, or it's an offset against your ultimate share of profits or distribution.
Mr. Mull, when I was reading this, the analogy I thought of, and I realized an LLC is analogous to a partnership under tax law and Nevada law, but I was thinking that under corporate law, if you sign a stock subscription agreement for X amount of dollars, you get your stock, and the company has a claim against you for the amount of the stock purchase in the subscription agreement. Is that your argument to us? That's similar to that? I'd be interested on the other side. I realize it's corporate law, it's not LLC law, there's a distinction, but I did think of that example.
It's a perfect analogy, Your Honor. And I would like to reserve a couple minutes, but let me just make a couple of real quick points. This isn't rocket science, this particular provision in the law, and the Wyoming case, the Kite case that we cited, basically interpreted the identical LLC provision as 391 under Wyoming law.
I want to ask a question. If was there any reason why they didn't put in the operating agreement that if you don't pay your contribution, it's a forfeiture? Wouldn't that have solved the problem as far as the respondent's concerned?
If they had agreed upon that in the operating agreement, I would agree with you, Justice Cherry, absolutely. But that's not in the operating agreement, and because it's not in the operating agreement, The law provides it. But the Wyoming court, in deciding a case where disgruntled members of an LLC were trying to basically exclude one of the members who hadn't, several of the members who hadn't made their contributions, as provided for in the operating agreement, the court stated, this is 234 P. 2nd at 356, the Kite case that's cited in the briefs. Second, the district court cited Wyoming statute, and I'll skip the number, which is the same statute as 86391, for the proposition that a member is liable to the LLC for the difference between his contributions to capital as actually made and as stated in the articles of organization. In other words, whether or not a member actually made the stated capital contribution is not determinative of that member's membership interest. And that's the law of Nevada, and I would ask that the court reverse the decision, remand it to the district court to determine the amount of Mr. Kaufman's interest, the monetary amount of Mr. Kaufman's interest in the LLC as of the date that he was divested of his interest by the LLC in 2003.
Are you aware of any cases where a rescission claim has been brought seeking to undo a membership interest in an LLC on facts analogous to this? In other words, Mr. Kaufman signs up and hypothetically he never paid his contribution, and the other members say he didn't pay, we want him out, that you could rescind the contractual relationship for non-performance on his part?
I'm not aware of any cases, Your Honor, but I think the result would be the same based on the LLC law.
Because so you would say that the statute, carrying this one step further, that 391 would prohibit that kind of a rescission claim?
I think so.
That's the impact, that's the upshot of your argument.
Yeah, well, and not only 391, but 321, 86-321 also is important here, which it deals with the form of contributions. It reads, the contributions to capital of a member to a limited liability company may be in cash, property, or services rendered, or a promissory note, or other binding obligation to contribute cash or property or to perform services. And just by the way, Mr. Kaufman did provide services. He managed HLK for 5 years from 97 until 2002, and he also guaranteed the refinance note for $1 million when they refinanced the property in 1999.
Before you sit down, if we assume that Mr. Kaufman has an interest, since one of the questions is dissolution of this, what interest does he have upon that dissolution?
He has a 20% interest upon dissolution.
It's not based upon his contribution?
No, it's not based upon his contribution.
Thank you. You have a minute left on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Jack McAuliffe. I represent the respondents in this case. And I'd at least like to start by saying that as far as we can tell from our research, ordinary contract law applies to cases such as investing in an LLC. And in this case, Kaufman agreed to put $54,000 into this LLC as an initial contribution. The purpose of the initial contribution was to make the down payment to acquire this property. He did not put any of his own money into this, and the trial court carefully examined what the sources of all the money was that went into this corporation, into this LLC.
Counsel, before the other side sat down, they indicated that Mr. Kaufman had been, in essence, running the daily activities of this business for some 5 years. So are we just to discount that as he was just an employee, no interest, no contribution to the LLC?
There was absolutely nothing involved in the management of this. The property was purchased. It was immediately leased to RFL. Mr. Kaufman signed the lease. The rent was equal to what the mortgage was, plus taxes, maintenance, and insurance on the building. No management whatsoever was required as far as this is concerned.
So, counsel, does that mean then that the terms and conditions set forth in the operating agreement are without meaning for purposes of determining his ownership interest?
I think the bottom line is, and part of our pleading was that we alleged failure of consideration for his interest in this LLC. And Judge Adams, in a footnote to his decision, pointed out that there was no consideration for his interest in this LLC.
Which means the answer to my question is yes, we ignore what was set forth in the operating agreement.
If we're entitled to set aside under ordinary contract principles this purchase because of a failure of consideration, then he gets nothing. And that's what Judge Adams concluded. And Judge Adams was not really infatuated with the story he heard from Mr. Kaufman about how he came to be involved in the LLC.
So given the lack of consideration, then no agreement was actually formed?
No.
Could you comment on the Kite case from Wyoming on which Mr. Moloff relies?
I can't. And part of the reason for that is that this court also has to recognize what actually was before the trial court when we were there the last time. And at that point in time, the LLC had been dissolved and it had been liquidated. And the issue before the court was an allocation of the proceeds from the liquidation of the asset. And that was the only issue that was really before Judge Adams. And at the prior determination by this court in this case, you had determined that the property should not be set aside into a constructive trust, because the effect of that would be to deprive Mr. Kaufman of his management interest.
But didn't this court specifically indicate on remand that
Judge Adams was to look at it in the sense of a charging order as opposed to anything else, and he didn't do that.
Well, I don't think that.
In the sense that you treat Mr. Kaufman as a judgment debtor and you tax his interest, or you assess his interest.
I don't think that's what the court did. The court said that the only remedy to RFL was a charging order pursuant to the statute because it would the constructive trust would divest him of the management interest.
So you disagree with this court's analysis that 86-401 isn't an exclusive remedy. That's what this court in its previous order indicated was 86-401 was the exclusive remedy in this situation.
I don't think that 86-401 supersedes in the law of this state the general laws of contract either.
So the fact that we remanded with that directive is of no consequence to what we are currently reviewing.
I'm sorry.
I guess I'm trying to politely state we sent this case back down and told the judge to do something that at least it appears he didn't do, and therefore we are supposed to ignore that.
No, ma'am.
Okay.
The instructions on the remand were in the RFL case, and they were to redetermine the offset that Mr. Kaufman was entitled to for unpaid salary and to recalculate interest on two notes. And there is nothing in your, there is nothing in that decision instructing the trial court as to what to do after it was reversed on the constructive trust issue.
The charging order and its exclusivity only relates, moreover, as I read 421 or 401, to a creditor of a member, not the member himself.
It only relates to a creditor.
And that would have been the people from whom Mr. Kaufman got the money, the entity, RFL, and whoever else it came from.
But they were also entitled to explore, again,
so the charging order related to them.
Principles.
Yeah, okay.
And there are a couple of things that I really need to point out to the court. And I heard Mr. Moloff tell us again that, well, Kaufman was not found guilty of conversion by the trial court. He was only found guilty of breach of fiduciary duty. Breach of fiduciary duty is a species of fraud. And I think I would rather be found guilty of conversion than breach of fiduciary duty, which is fraudulent. And Mr. Moloff also says that in reality that $24,600 has been repaid, and that I dispute. The $350,000 that the trial court found in the RFL case was based upon a compilation of checks that were written to Kaufman and advances where he called the RFL bank and asked him to transfer money to his bank account. And it was a compilation only of things that went directly to Kaufman. And in this case, the $10,200 check written on RFL was payable to Western Title. It was not picked up, and it's not included in the judgment. The $6,300, he took a check that RFL received from the city of Rosemead to the bank, cashed it, got a cashier's check for $6,300 and deposited that in the escrow. And then he borrowed $8,000 from Charlie Harper, which he put on the books of RFL as an obligation of RFL, and RFL repaid it. And I know at some point I heard Mr. Kaufman say that, well, he borrowed $8,000 from RFL to repay Mr. Harper. And at the time Mr. Harper was repaid, Mr. Kaufman didn't work for the company anymore.
Mr. McCullough, I'm just
dumbfounded on this case. The accounting on this is unbelievable. If I were a corporate accountant, I'd go insane at this dipping into the account and cashing checks and doing all. And I'm thinking about the taxes. If this is Mr. Kaufman's money here, you got to pay taxes on it. This isn't a piggy bank you dip into and grab some money and go buy stock where LLC interest. Now, you're telling me no evidence was developed in district court about the accounting, the taxes, the analysis here? Is that correct? Is that how this case went?
We went through tons of accounting.
And what about taxes, though? I mean, you know.
Taxes were not paid by Mr.
Was there evidence of that at the trial, then, like that, if taxes were or were not paid?
Mr. Kaufman's accountant told us that no taxes had been paid.
Okay.
On these diversions.
More important to what's before us today, since you're talking about this purported contribution, was HLK ever required to divest itself of the monies that were paid in? Or was that liability only extended to Mr. Kaufman separately?
Well, at this point, the LLC has been dissolved.
I understand that, but you've been talking about the money and where it came from, but did HLK have to give the money back? Or was that accepted and Mr. Kaufman had the problem of making it up to the parties who contributed it?
The trial court authorized the conveyance of the asset to Mr. Hawley, based upon an appraisal that we submitted to the trial court. And Mr. Kaufman at this point has a deed of trust, a second deed of trust on the property for such amount as the courts may determine that he would be entitled to from the proceeds. That's the status of that.
But following up on Justice Douglas's question, $54,000 was paid ostensibly for Kaufman's interest into HLK, right?
Yes.
When it's dissolved, where did that $54,000, to the extent there was anything of it left, or the 20% interest that Kaufman acquired illicitly, you say, where did that go? Who got it?
Mr. Hawley acquired it by purchase, and there was no cash in the LLC. There never was any cash in the LLC. There was never any profit in the LLC.
But why are we here? If the value, if Kaufman's interest is valueless.
Well, that's what we're in court to determine, is whether or not that naked 20% interest that he never paid for entitles him to some of the fruits of the sale.
Secondary sources, and I know that they are less persuasive, obviously, than the Kite case or the Delaware cases that were set forth in your briefs, but isn't it a simple statement that comes from Keating, is one who fails to make an agreed contribution nevertheless is a member unless the agreement provides otherwise? And isn't it, don't we just come down to that? No money, he's got a membership, that's it.
I believe that the entity that's involved also has the option of an alternative remedy, which would, again, be the ordinary contract remedy.
And that would be based on what authority, what legal authority?
That there is a failure of consideration. And that is something that we pleaded, and it's something that's at least footnoted in Judge Adams' decision, that he agreed to pay $54,000 for this interest. He didn't pay any of his own money for that interest, and we believe that we should be entitled to rescind based upon a failure of that consideration.
So your position simply is this doesn't belong under Chapter 86 at all, and if we disagree with you, is there any legal authority out there that supports the forfeiture of an interest in an LLC for failure to make a contribution?
No, I think that under Chapter 86, and that would be Section 521.
I'm sorry?
Section 521.
Okay.
And that provides that after a judicial dissolution of an LLC, then the proceeds are to be distributed in a certain order. You pay the creditors, you repay the investors, and then anything else is distributed based upon your capital contribution. And I believe that applies, and Judge Adams believed that applied in this case also, is that his share should be based on his capital contribution, and since he made no capital contribution, he's not entitled to anything. And frankly, I don't think it's a particular problem, or it's the kind of thing that I've encountered on several occasions over the years, where two or three guys get together and go into a business, and somebody makes a promise and he doesn't keep it. And at the end of the line, does he get to share in all the benefit when he didn't keep his promise? And we do believe that implied in every contract is a duty of good faith and fair dealing, and we didn't have that for Mr. Kaufman. And I would like to I guess I can't reserve 1 second.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Very quickly, I think Justice Douglas hit the nail on the head when he asked the question about the $54,000 that was, in fact, contributed, because there is no dispute that $54,000 went into this entity on behalf of Mr. Kaufman, and that's undisputed. And I think also this court's decision in the 2008 decision, which remanded the RFL case to Judge Adams because he improperly imposed a constructive trust in favor of RFL for Mr. Kaufman's interest, is also relevant here, because in essence, as Justice Sayle pointed out, the district court basically ignored this court's ruling and in essence did exactly the same thing. Didn't call it a constructive trust, just said, well, instead of going through RFL to Mr. Hawley, we're just going to give it right to Mr. Hawley. And in effect, that's exactly the same thing as creating the constructive trust that this court reversed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justice.
This case will stand submitted, and we're going to be in recess for a couple of minutes, and we'll be right back for the next case.